This is Hidden Corners, Preserving Chattanooga's Architecture. In this episode, what is historic preservation? To look forward, sometimes you have to look back. We begin the first in our series of conversations on scenic routes about historic preservation here in Chattanooga in collaboration with the nonprofit Preserve Chattanooga, formerly known as Cornerstones. Todd Morgan is Executive Director of Preserve Chattanooga. Melissa Mortimer is Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Chattanooga.
Todd, Melissa, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ray. It's a pleasure to be here.
Happy to be here.
I'd like each of you to start off by telling us a bit about your roles. Todd, you first.
Well, I started as the executive director of Cornerstones last November, and we are now Preserve Chattanooga. We did a name change earlier this year, which I'm very excited about. We are the historic preservation organization for Chattanooga. I came here from Knoxville, so I was with Knox Heritage before. So preservation has been part of my life for a while. I think it's so important to a community. So it's really a treat for me to be here, get to know this community, and hopefully have an impact on this town as we move forward.
I currently serve as the Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Chattanooga, which runs the Historic Zoning Commission, which governs our local historic districts and landmark buildings. That currently includes St. Elmo, Ferger Place, Fort Wood, and Battery Place Historic Districts, and as well as the Shaven House, which is our only local landmark, and it's a Frank Lloyd Wright house on Missionary Ridge. So I serve as the city staff, administering the guidelines that cover the district, and I'm also on the board of Preserve Chattanooga, and have previously served on the commission for the city before taking over as staff.
I'd like each of you to share your perspective on the most basic question. Why is historic preservation important?
I think everyone has a different reason why they think preservation is important. It is very important to our built environment, looking at the materials, architecture, and design, the sense of place and memories that each place holds. You can't get the materials or the construction methods that were built in the 1900s any longer. Old growth wood is gone. Designs are constantly changing, which represent how our lives and the way we live in these spaces are changing. So each place and time period holds special meaning and importance in all of our lives.
I completely concur with that, Melissa. For me, it started because I started noticing that I was just falling in love with the beauty that I was seeing in historic buildings. The architecture, the design, the materials, you know, all of the things that you just mentioned. But it was more than that. You get into the history of a place and what it means to be a part of the fabric of a community. So, you know, I can be walking down Broad Street and I'll stop in front of the McClellan Building, for example. It's one of my favorites. And I stop every time. Like, I'll stop and just look at it. I'll probably take a picture. I don't need any more pictures of the building, but maybe the sunlight's hidden in a certain way or I've seen a new detail. And I can't help but just admire that Beaux-Arts architecture that was created by R.H. Hunt, who is Chattanooga's master architect. You can get into many layers of studying all the methodologies of how he thought about how that space should be created and expressed. But in the end, it was important for businesses that was built for Provident Life Insurance Company. They wanted to convey an image of their business. And so they put a lot of effort into the design from street level all the way up to the top, which is amazing because you can continue to walk down the street. More modern buildings are very boxy. They really don't have a lot of design. So what I've discovered is that often the architecture that's in our cities, it's really our most public form of visual art in the community. Now, that's my personal passion. I love the beauty in these places. From a professional perspective, we can talk a lot about decades of studies that have shown that historic preservation has very real economic benefits for a community. It creates jobs. It's sustainable. A lot of these buildings can be repurposed in ways that are so interesting. They can offer unique housing opportunities. They can be used in ways that are creative and help elevate a business or a use to a level that a new building really can't recreate. So it's many layers. There's all of the heartstring stuff too, because it's wonderful to walk down the street and think about where your grandparents may have walked or where your parents, maybe you have memories of going to places with people. So all of those things are layered into historic preservation. And I think it's really important for folks to know that preservation isn't about well, we can't ever do anything else. We just stop at some moment in time. We live with this. We never touch it. That's not really the way it works. We want to make sure that we keep the assets that we have that are beautiful and irreplaceable. And when we build new things, they're complementing these spaces that we learn from the scale and proportion of these older buildings. We may not have the same materials available and we may not have the same craftspeople to do that, but we can certainly learn a lot from these buildings. And once they're gone, they're gone.
I think too, tagging on to what Todd says is each city in our country or the world is different and it's based on the built environment, what's there. So what makes Chattanooga special has a lot to do with our built environment and our buildings and our architecture and why they were built in a certain way or what industry was here sitting in what used to be the Interstate Life Insurance building. Currently, Chattanooga was really big on having insurance companies here. So we look back and see the development of that related to the city. So everything tells a story. And I think if we lose all these places and buildings, then we kind of lose our story of what makes us special.
And I'll add to that, because in addition to the economic studies, there actually are a lot of psychological studies about preservation. There's an interesting book by Sarah Goldhagen, and I hope I'm pronouncing her last name correctly. It's called Welcome to Your World. And I saw this in a bookstore, and it just fascinated me because she goes into studying neuroscience and environmental psychology to help us understand that the spaces that we're in, you know, whether it's a room or a building or a city, they have very real psychological effects on us. And often we're just so busy moving through life, we don't really think about it. But I would challenge folks to think about, have you been in a place that you just couldn't wait to get out of? Have you been in a place that you just didn't want to leave? What was it about those places that made you want to stay or go? What made you feel safe or unsafe? And how we build our cities going forward, I think, is going to be very important to us socially, culturally, and psychologically.
Let's talk about the current state of historic preservation here in Chattanooga. Both of you have already touched on the perspective of losing places, and this city has its share of places that it has lost.
Well, that's true. And I think every community does, unfortunately. I feel like you can judge how successful a community is with regards to historic preservation by how it uses what I refer to as its timeless, natural, and built assets that really exhibit high quality, great character. And are we using those places to their fullest potential economically, but also as part of the quality of life for the community? Overall in Chattanooga, I feel like we're in a relatively good place because at the moment, developers today, they understand what a historic project can bring to their portfolio. And I've talked to so many that say this project, the residential units sold out more quickly than a from scratch built project or some similar comment because people identified with the history. They may have had a great memory of a place that they wanted to go back to, or it's just really unique and different. And so it stands out. So I think Common House is a good example of that. That's the old YMCA off Main Street. I used to walk by that building when it was just sitting there boarded up. And I thought, this is beautiful. Like, why do we let places like this just sit? And now they've turned it into this beautiful social club. And really the architecture creates the character that they're going for there. Our organization, when it was Cornerstones throughout the years, has been actively involved with saving buildings. So the old Ellis Hotel, which is the St. John's restaurant, was part of that effort. The Choo Choo Terminal is part of our efforts now. The passenger freight building, if you like Urban Stack, that was one of our projects. The Walnut Street Bridge, that was a big save for this community. So there's a lot to be proud of. And even right now, there are projects going on like Milltown up around Main and Dodds in that area of town. That has an old mill as its centerpiece, but it's a catalyst for a much larger project that's going to bring a lot of different housing opportunities, market rate housing, as well as affordable housing, and really just transform an entire section of the city. And it probably wouldn't have even been thought about if it hadn't been for that mill and someone thinking, this is such a cool building. I can do something with this, something I've seen in other communities, and I know I'll have a successful project there.
Our guests are Todd Morgan, Executive Director of Preserve Chattanooga, and Melissa Mortimer, Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Chattanooga.
Going on with the mill, it's going back to what I was originally saying, is textiles used to be our number one industry for the city. So reusing these mills, I know there's two different projects and a lot of them are drawn to it because there's these really cool, intriguing spaces to be reused. And there's also opportunities like historic tax credits. Both our Dixie Mercerizing and Coosa Thatcher, which is where Milltown is, are both National Register listed buildings, important for their relationship to that industry. So there is so much potential. And going back to the Common House, the thing that I think makes that place so beautiful, it's very well designed, but it's the bones of that building. It's the floors, the woodwork. It's the feeling you get in there and the memories of it being this originally, you know, it was a social club as a YMCA. So bringing that back is really interesting and cool. And you can't build those buildings today. Materials aren't there, but also the cost to rebuild something, it's irreplaceable with the memories, the craftsmanship and the materials themselves. But I think in Chattanooga, as far as from the city perspective, what we try to do, and it's we have more protection over our historic resources through local zoning than many of the other like big national programs. So like National Register, what really has the teeth to protect these places are our local ordinances that protect our historic districts. So we look at any changes or alteration to the exterior of these homes so that we can keep that feeling and sense of place and integrity of these districts intact.
I think, you know, that protection is so important because as I said earlier, when something's gone, it's gone. And we certainly have lost things in the community. Cameron Hill, I think, is probably the biggest. It's kind of hard for me to even think about. You know, you think about 1,100 buildings removed. I mean, over 1,000. Well, that's a huge chunk of the city that was wiped out, with the primary reason being we needed to have an interstate. The mayor was terrified that Chattanooga wouldn't have an interstate. And so not only did they tear down everything, they actually lowered Cameron Hill 150 feet. So it's not just removing buildings that they may have thought were neglected or were running down, but they actually even removed the whole hilltop to fill in to make way for the interstate. That's a pretty dramatic example of urban renewal. And I've had people tell me that it was just stunning. If it was still here, we would have neighborhoods that are more similar to what you see in places like Charleston and Savannah. And so I can only imagine that because I never had a chance to walk through it. If you're ever downtown and you're on Market and 8th, you can pop into the Truist Bank Building lobby and you can see some wonderful photographs of the old American National Bank building. It was stunning. When it opened in 1927, people called it Chattanooga's Taj Mahal. And it was covered in Italian marble. It's just beautiful. And when I saw that, I was so sad that I couldn't walk in and experience that space. Nothing against Truist. They didn't have anything to do with that. That was back in 60, 70.
Under whatever name.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just an incredible building that was built and then lost. Union Depot, that was demolished in 1972. The Lyndhurst Mansion, 34,000 square feet. That was considered one of the most elegant and largest homes in the southern United States. I think about Biltmore and the economic studies that have been done at Biltmore. Biltmore could have been demolished. But now, well, actually, this was a few years ago. They did a study and discovered that for every $1 that someone spent at Biltmore, they were spending $12 in the Asheville community. That's huge. So it's just a house and people love to come and visit it. It's an incredible house, of course. But it has a real economic impact. And I think Lyndhurst Mansion with its formal gardens and its architecture could have been something like that for Chattanooga. We have demolition that's going on now. We actually are in the process of losing the St. George, which is across from the Chattanooga Choo Choo. The current owner didn't have a choice. It's because of what previous owners did do or didn't do. That's why it's so important to remember these places, why organizations like ours exist, why we have historic overlays and the city is involved in this, because we just have to pay attention to these resources before they slip through our fingers.
Talk more about the Birche building and why we should be paying attention to that.
When I first saw that building, I was amazed by it. And I have to tell people, if you don't know this, most of that building no longer exists. Most of it was demolished because the city had plans to actually put a new street system through downtown. But what's left is this beautiful stone edifice. It's a small footprint, which means it's challenging to figure out what to do. But it's a beautiful building and could be incorporated into a larger development. Unfortunately, it's just sitting there at the moment. And I haven't fully investigated or talked to the owner to know what conditions are present. But when I drive around town, I'll see places like that. And I'll think, there needs to be life going on in this building.
For those of you who don't know which building it is, it's the little pink building with the, it has a turret, doesn't it?
It does.
Across
it has...
from Community Pie, right on Market Street. It's kind of secluded and it's a sea of parking lots at the moment.
It's a little mini castle there on the street, I think.
And then we have Little Home.
Yes. So that's one of our threatened places. Many people may know it as the Williams Hardy House. That's up on Lookout Mountain. It was given to the National Park as a gift, but it was built after the Civil War. So it's out of context to what they're wanting their visitors to experience when they go to the Cravens House site. And it's not Little Home's fault that it is where it is. It's a charming piece of architecture. And I personally feel very strongly that it should be saved. But I also understand the National Park Service and what their goals are for that site. And so a lot of times when we're looking at places and we're advocating for them, we try to really get to know the situation and talk to folks to see what we're facing, because every situation is different. Ingalls Stadium, I think, is a good example of that. A lot of people have very strong emotional ties to Ingalls Stadium. UTC owns it now, but UTC is not the threat to the stadium. And the threat is that how do you use a facility like that in today's modern era and meet accessibility requirements and so forth? But then also, how is it funded? And then what's it going to be used for? So a lot of times the threat itself is just figuring out how does a place fit in the current economic environment or the current needs for a community.
I think as well, going to the Little Home or William Hardy House, which was a former mayor of Chattanooga who built it for his wife, in preservation, there's often an argument of what the period of significance is. So when the Park Service is looking at this property, they're saying, well, this wasn't here during the Civil War. But often preservationists look at, okay, but this is also significant to this time period when this was built. Kind of going back to what Todd said of like preservation shouldn't be time stopped at this point and we can't have any progress. So even when we're looking at, say, a house in St. Elmo, you could have an addition on the back that was, the house might have been built in 1900, and then you had a 1940s addition on the back. That addition isn't any less significant to the historic integrity of the house because it tells a story of the development of the house. They needed more room because the family that built the house had more children. Times are changing. We have more stuff today. Do we need more storage? Do we need more bathrooms? So it tells a development of time and makes that physical building of showing time and the difference in our lives that we're living. So I think with the Little Home, you know, we have to look at, sure, it wasn't up here during the Civil War, but a lot of Lookout Mountain wasn't up there in any of the houses. So do we keep these certain areas to only be set in this one period of time, or do we show the progression of how the mountain developed? But it's always up to, everyone has a different perspective on that.
Our guests are Todd Morgan, Executive Director of Preserve Chattanooga, and Melissa Mortimer, Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Chattanooga.
What about adding CSAS to the landmark designations?
So CSAS is our newest application that's been submitted for a landmark status. As I said earlier, we have one landmark building, which is the Frank Lloyd Wright Shaven House, the only Frank Lloyd Wright house in the state of Tennessee on Missionary Ridge. We've had this ability to have these landmarks designated since our ordinance was originally written in the, I think it's either late 80s or early 90s, but we've only had one building that's actually been nominated. And so I think this is a big, significant, important change for the city, because it makes me feel like people are starting to move forward and want to protect more places. And with schools, I mean, you look at the development, there's always the argument of, will our historic schools meet the 21st century students' needs? But these schools have such a sense of place and memories connected to it. That's where actually the applicant was a previous student of the school and just sees the importance of its architecture. Is also R.H. Hunt design, which talked about earlier. He's our most significant architect in the city. And there's so many memories. My middle school has been demolished. And every time I drive by, it makes me feel so sad that I still have my memories in my head, of course, but that place is gone. So I think it also opens up the thought process of going back to, again, to Todd's thing, is how do we use these spaces? If it's not going to be, if in the future it's not used as a school building, how do we reuse these places? How does it become an income producing property? Because the worst thing we could do is let a building sit vacant and say, well, we'd rather have it vacant to save it, because that's not saving it. We want it to be used. We want people to be in the spaces, creating new memories. And I think adaptive reuse is such a great the younger generation wants to be in these cool spaces that you can't recreate.
I was very excited to learn about the Landmarks Ordinance when I came to Chattanooga. That's something that we didn't have up in Knoxville. And even though there's only one property that has that designation right now, the Chattanooga School for Arts and Sciences is just like the perfect candidate. I mean, you couldn't really dream up a better candidate for this type of ordinance, because you do have the architecture, the pedigree there. You have the fact that it was named after the founder of the school system here, the Wyatt Hall. And on top of that, you have thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have had that experience that Melissa just talked about by going through its halls over the years. So it's really hard to find properties that have impacted that many people's lives that make them worthy of being designated a local landmark. So I'm very excited about this application.
And then there are the efforts to build a database for the Downtown Historic District.
Yes. So Preserve Chattanooga received a grant from the Lyndhurst Foundation to build a database for the National Register District. It's the Downtown Historic District. It has 46 contributing structures that are part of that. And what we're going to do is we have an intern that we're working with to build this database where we can look at all of these buildings. Are they empty? Are they occupied? Are they in good shape, poor shape, great shape? Who the owners are? You know, what's going on with them, so that we can keep track of their condition and hopefully advocate for the ones that may be experiencing slow revival or there isn't much going on, help get something going with these sites. And this is a database that will be shared. So we want something that the city has access to, that River City Company has access to, Design Studio, like all of the players in the community that could help to make sure we have a very vibrant downtown core. We want this to be a tool for them.
I think too, having this as a resource, I get calls and emails all the time at the city of developers saying, we are specifically looking for historic structures to bring these businesses and to redevelop in downtown. Do you have a list? And this would be a great resource to show this is what's available. This is like the square footage of the building, and just really emphasizing and promoting reusing these buildings. So keeping our historic context downtown while also bringing in jobs.
Let's talk more about historic districts and the Historic Zoning Commission. Melissa, you might not be able to answer some of this as a city employee, but definitely want to get your perspective and also Todd's on whether what we have now is considered fair, if the city's doing enough.
So like I said, I govern the historic district, so I'm in charge of doing all of the fun enforcement, which not everyone really enjoys, but basically our historic districts, we have historic guidelines that regulate exterior alterations, site work, so fences, if you're going to restore your windows, siding, roofs, all that, and it's to protect that historic character, feeling, and integrity of these historic resources to really make the neighborhoods feel and stay feeling special to the residents. Unlike the National Register, it's the only real protection we have over these buildings. And so without it, it's the only real protection we have for these places and buildings. And so without it, we could risk another Cameron Hill. I mean, St. Elmo is over 1,000 properties. That would be like wiping St. Elmo off the map. So having these things in place to protect these places is so important.
It really is. I'm a huge fan of historic districts. And I know a lot of people get a little bit scared by those. I've often been called into community meetings where a neighborhood might be having that discussion. And half the folks who live there may want it, and half the folks just think it's a terrible idea. And what I've discovered is that there's often a lot of misinformation and miscommunication that goes into these discussions. For example, a lot of people are afraid that, oh, we're going to be designated a historic district, my taxes are going to go up. Well, that's not what happens. You know, it's the market forces that will change your taxes, or local governance, or somebody's going to tell me I can't paint my door a certain color. Usually the design guidelines are not that specific in a community like this. They might be in a very restricted neighborhood in Charleston, but that's a whole different animal. So the purpose of these districts is to keep things stable and to keep things fair, so that people who have invested in a historic home in a lovely neighborhood, they know that somebody can't come in and just go crazy, tear a lot of things down, do a lot of alterations, which in turn ruins the character, but also impacts their property. So, you know, if I have a beautiful Victorian home and I've put a lot of love and care into fixing that up, and I bought it because of where it is and how much I like it, somebody comes in next door, gets it, tears it down, builds a five-story, you know, just goes crazy with the site. Suddenly my property is devalued. The neighborhood changes. So I like the fact that historic districts allow some governance And I like to think of it as almost like free design advice. I mean, you have professionals who serve on the Historic Zoning Commission. They listen to everybody. They will work with you if you're doing a project. The key is to just go to them and apply when you're doing something. Understand what is allowed and what isn't in your neighborhood. I know they'll work with you. No one's trying to take over your property rights because that's still very, very important. It's just we've identified this area as special to the community. It's special to the people who live there. Let's provide a layer of oversight into what's going on. And I think it's tremendously beneficial. And I also think that for folks who are scared about market forces and affordable housing and how neighborhoods can change, I actually feel like historic districts often can prevent people coming in, tearing down a lot of buildings, densifying the neighborhood. Probably gives you a better chance of being able to stay in your home long term than a neighborhood without a designation like that.
I think too, you know, what I usually tell people is when they're talking about historic zoning, I say, well, why did you want to live in St. Elmo? Or why did you want to live in Fort Wood? And it's almost all about the neighborhood and the feelings that are associated with it. So without those protections, you could have a house built out of a shipping container next to you. I don't know, but I also like to say it keeps your neighbor from doing something you might not want done to your own house. So we do have, just going into like the process of it a little more, is there is what we call a certificate of appropriateness. And that's when anytime you're doing a change to your house or building. And so that is submitted to city staff, which would be me. And then it either goes into a simple staff review if it meets guidelines, or it goes to the Historic Zoning Commission, which would, we have a commission of 9 people representing the neighborhoods, along with having Todd is going to be a new member recently serving on our commission. We're really excited about. We have preservation specialists, contractors, architects, someone from the Planning Commission. And then most importantly, we have representatives from each community because they know what the neighbors care about or what they're passionate about, and they're there to support the neighborhood. So a project, all new constructions, things that don't meet the guidelines, will go to the Historic Zoning Commission to have a design review, as Todd says. And I like to think that a lot of these projects come out and a lot of applicants say, you know, I didn't even think about this, but this is a much better design. And so while we're not there technically to redesign your project, sometimes it could have some helpful hints and suggestions to improve a project. But then once the COA is issued and you don't need any other permits, then you are feel free to start with your project, and then we'll be like a final inspection. But it could be really staff reviews. Sometimes I get done within an hour, sometimes 24 hours. And then the Historic Zoning Commission is once every month on the third Thursday of every month. So that does put at least a month onto your project timeline, but staff reviews can be done fairly simple, and it's not necessarily the super long process to get a fence.
Our guests are Todd Morgan, Executive Director of Preserve Chattanooga, and Melissa Mortimer, Historic Preservation Planner for the City of Chattanooga.
What gaps do you see that we have in policy, and where you see those gaps, where do you think we should fill them?
When you look at best practices in historic preservation, there are a lot of wonderful examples from across the country. And I think you should always look at best practices in a community. But I think it's easier for places like Chattanooga, just look at cities that are close by. I came here from Knoxville, so I like to look to what Knoxville was doing because I have personal experience there with things that worked. And I would love to see those things duplicated here in Chattanooga. And they're pretty simple. One of them is that Knoxville established a preservation fund. This started in 2014 under Madeline Rojero's administration as mayor. And she set aside a pocket of money to help with historic buildings. And these were buildings that were either in a local historic district or a national register district or on Knox Heritage's endangered list. So as long as you fit one of those three criteria, you could apply for funding. And this could help with roof repairs, window replacements, exterior, anything exterior on the property. It had a $2.7 million impact since 2014. And it's helped everything from commercial buildings downtown to Tennessee Theater, Bijou Theater, the Blunt Mansion, you know, historic sites like that, right down to residential properties at first. And every year, as they worked with the community, they would adjust that program a little bit so that they could adjust how the needs were being met. It helped spawn, actually, a local grant program that our organization administered called the H1 Gap Fund. And a pool of money was set aside to help low to moderate income homeowners who live in historic districts deal with making improvements to the exterior of their homes. And so it would offer up to $2,000 reimbursable grant money. It would also cover all of the expenses associated with going before the Historic Zoning Commission. So it would pay for the application fee. I remember one project in particular, we helped a guy with the siding on his house, and he replaced his own wood siding on his home in a historic district, which if you saw the house and how high it was and how far he was climbing on that ladder, it scared us to death, but he did it. So the grant did exactly what it meant to do. It meant to help people who live in historic districts not feel as though they are being charged more to do the work that being in a historic district requires. And so I would like to see something like that here. I would like to see us have a demolition by neglect ordinance as well. Knoxville has that. It's designed to prevent the demolition or the deterioration of a building that is basically being demolished because an owner is not willing to do what needs to be done or is unable to do what needs to be done to take care of it. And again, that applies to anything in a local historic district or on the National Register. Another very simple tool that they have up there is a 60-day delay. So if you have a historic site and you apply for a demo permit, you have to wait 60 days unless it's a threat to public safety. So if the facade's about to fall over on the sidewalk, that's a whole different conversation. But, you know, I'll give you an example. Sometimes these things work well and sometimes they don't. I can use a couple of houses as examples of a demo delay ordinance situation where one worked and one didn't. The one that didn't work is a house that was for sale. It was a mid-century modern, and I contacted the person because I was notified that there was a demo permit filed. And I got that classic response. This is my property. I can do what I want. It's been for sale. Somebody should have bought it. I actually kept talking to him, and we ended up having really good conversations. The house wasn't saved. He did build just a mansion on this site. But there was another instance where a house was historic, great shape. Someone had just bought it, just decided it didn't meet their needs. There was a transition in the living room to the front foyer space where you had to step down two steps. And they decided they just needed to demolish it and build something that was more accessible. But it was in great shape. We were able to talk to her contractor, talk to indirectly to everyone that kind of surrounded the owner. To make a long story short, that person decided to buy another house, and the home was bought by somebody who really did care about saving it as it is. So it gave us that time to have conversations about it.
As a city employee, I can't really speak of the policies we should be improving on, but there are some programs and stuff that Todd and I are, and along with the rest of the board at Preserve Chattanooga, are working on that might improve things for the city. We're looking at possibility of doing like a realtor education class on historic preservation. This comes into play. I see this every day, is sometimes people sell houses in a neighborhood and the buyer isn't made aware that it's in the historic district. And so then they start working on the house without a COA and then are stopped for enforcement. And just having that knowledge of the benefits of historic districts and everything that Todd and I have been kind of talking about, told to a realtor, could really help in situations of kind of getting a little knowledge to someone maybe that hasn't lived in a historic house or knows what it would take to live in a historic house beforehand, would really help out us, the city, with enforcement of the COAs. And then also we are hoping to add a lot more programming by doing education workshops on, you know, maybe historic trade. So not that many people know how to do historic plaster. It's very hard to find someone to restore your plaster here. People don't know how to repoint their brick. And if you use the wrong mortar, you're going to cause even more damage to your building and cost you more money. So just having the education of like what type of masonry work needs to be done, how to do it, how to restore your own windows. So we give these owners these tools to do things themselves and maybe save them some money. And also it can be kind of fun to do things yourself. I think that's a really big thing now for maybe even the younger generation of DIY on your own house. So we give them those tools to do them themselves. It can alleviate financial strains of also the lack of some craftsmen that just aren't here anymore to do these projects. I'm excited that those policies and ordinances that are already in place can be expanded and we could continue to grow.
And speaking of DIY, each of you, talk about grassroots efforts that can help the community overall when it comes to these issues.
For Preserve Chattanooga, I am the sole staff person at our organization. We are the quintessential small nonprofit with really big ideas and a big goal to help this community. And we have a wonderful board of people that help us. But in the end, we need a little army of preservationists out there in the community doing things and really kind of looking at their neighborhoods and figuring out what could we do as a neighborhood or a community to make a difference. So, for example, you may live in a neighborhood and you see a blighted property. It could be a house or it could be an old commercial building. Well, maybe gather some people around that are interested in this, start doing some research. Who owns it? Why is it that way? Is it a local owner? Is it an out-of-town owner? Are there things that you need to speak to the city about? Is it a danger? Can you talk to the owner? Do you share some ideas of what it could be? Would they be willing to sell the property? If it needs to be stabilized, would they be open to volunteers boarding up a window or something like that? Anything to kind of help buy some time for this property. And then if you have a commercial district, these are really great areas for folks to get together and form a little committee and start looking at all the different things they could do to turn this into a thriving commercial neighborhood. Again, I know with the Regional Planning Authority here in Chattanooga, they have the River to Ridge plan, and they've identified all of these different nodes, neighborhood zones. Some are larger than others. Some you'll know right off the bat, like Glass Street, which was once a very thriving commercial area. I'm a Main Street guy, the National Main Street Center, and so I love their four-point approach to neighborhood preservation. And it always starts at the grassroots level. Every community, this is what happens. You get people together, you divide them up, and you have some people who are looking at the design of the district. So how does this place look? How do we clean it up? How do we improve landscaping? How do we make the building facades look nicer? You have another group that's focused on promoting the area. You know, that could be a street fair. You know, it could be just getting people re-engaged with the space, because when we forget about places, maybe we don't drive through them anymore. We certainly may not be walking around them. A significant step is pulling people back in so that you have that human presence again and you're piquing their interest in what can happen. And you start changing perceptions. You have to change those perceptions. Oh, there's a parking problem, so nothing will work here. No, that's probably not true. Oh, this is an unsafe place. It's probably not any more unsafe than another. It just may just look that way, which is what a cleanup operation can do to help. You got another little group of people and you put them on the economic side of things. It's like, what kind of businesses are here? What kind of businesses do the neighborhood need now that could come into these buildings? And then you always have another group that just keeps everybody ticking. You know, they're the organizers, and they're also communicating with agencies throughout the community. So whether it's the city and what their codes department may be able to do, or what planning department may be able to do, and thinking ahead about city streets and traffic flow, sidewalks, bike lanes, things like that. Just having those conversations with entities like Preserve Chattanooga. Are there historic assets there that we need to have our eye on? Are there things we could do to help promote what's going on? It just starts with people kind of rolling up their sleeves and saying, you know what, this place is worth taking care of. I'm going to do my part, and I'm going to partner with people in the community where I can. And it's amazing what can come out of that.
Obviously, I agree with everything Todd just said. But I think grassroots, we are doing those programs, which kind of started with a grassroots thing that I got together with a group of people that I knew from different groups from Instagram and just said, you know, hey, we're meeting at this bar to talk about history and preservation. And it just came out of it that we're like, let's do these, you know, quarterly workshops, because that's something we see is that people want to learn how to do these things themselves. And like, how can we help? Can we do lecture series on National Register? Because there's always misconceptions with what that means. I mean, we're doing this series now with WTC, which we really appreciate. But I think grassroots to me is, and my friends probably hate me for, is that I talk about preservation and buildings and architecture all the time. My sister, every time we go on a trip, it's, I'm not going on a historic walking tour again with you, you know, but she has come around to, she reserves some time on all of our trips to go see the historic places, but I consider it a win to just, I constantly have these conversations and just educating people, because at the end of the day, if someone drives down the street and they notice that cornice that they never noticed before, or that building where they learned about some cool historic story that happened there, I think that's, you know, what we're here for, and that's what we're trying to do.
Ultimately, we just want people to understand the beautiful places that we have here in Chattanooga. I mean, I was so impressed when I first started coming to this city. And even though there are things that have been lost, there is still a lot of beautiful architecture here. So it's a joy for me to drive around downtown and, you know, through a lot of our neighborhoods and see the architecture that's here and has been here for multiple generations. I would encourage parents with kids, take your kids out and walk around, take them up to a building and talk about what you're seeing on that building. We actually have on our website at preservechattanooga.com, R.H. Hunt tour. And so you can see some of his most prominent buildings downtown, you know, and they're all different because he was a classicist really in his design, but that might vary from Beaux-Arts to something a little more Art Deco. And you'll find eagles on buildings and shields on buildings and flowers. And it's even fun for me to contemplate how we would build things. And they would be so deliberately beautiful when it was just a place to sell a car or have your tires changed. You know, I think about where Steam Logistics is going in on the corner. That was the original Ford dealership in Chattanooga. And next door, Mr. Etheridge, who owned that dealership, built his Lincoln dealership and the tire service center. And if you just stop and look at that building and the beautiful terracotta facade, and you see the shields that have the L for Lincoln up in the corner, it's beautiful. I'm like, oh my gosh, there are no tire centers that look like that today. And so people went out of their way to make these places beautiful. And I think that should be appreciated. And I think we should learn from it.
All right. A lot more to talk about in coming conversations. Todd Morgan, Melissa Mortimer, thanks so much.
Thank you, Ray, very much. This has been a pleasure.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, Ray.
Hidden Corners, Preserving Chattanooga's Architecture, is a co-production of Scenic Roots at WUTC and Preserve Chattanooga. Learn more about Preserve Chattanooga at preservechattanooga.com. More about the podcast, available at wutc.org/hiddencorners. Thank you for listening.